The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Yeah, back for round two, ladies and gentlemen. We're here with Randall Park. We're waiting on Eddie Huang. He's stuck in traffic, coming over Topanga, probably dodging hippies. You ever take that ride over Topanga?
Oh, yeah.
Pass by those fucking weird organic people. I passed by a guy who had a sign. Yeah, a lot of hemp.
A lot of hemp.
a lot of beads, a lot of dirty feet. I passed by a guy who had a sign that said, vegan gardener. Like, what does that mean? Like, no, it wasn't vegan gardener. It was vegan landscaping. That's what it was.
Oh,
I was like,
vegan.
What the fuck does that even mean? I just wanted to hit him. Just wanted to fucking have bears chase him or something. Son of a bitch. Randall Park, ladies and gentlemen.
What's happening, Joe?
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks for coming on here.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, so for sure.
You are in the middle of one of the most controversial movies in the history of the world.
Yeah. I play Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, in The Interview.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is fucking crazy, man.
I didn't think it was crazy when I signed on. I realized it was crazy, you know, in the midst of all of that. Yeah.
What is the verdict? Because they say that it's not North Korea. Someone was saying it was an insider at Sony. They had it narrowed down to a woman who hacked it.
Read that. You know, I don't know. Because after they came out with that, the FBI came out and said, no, it is North Korea. We have a lot of information that we haven't released, but it is. Trust us. But then, you know, the private kind of security experts still think it's not North Korea.
I would almost always go with private security experts over the FBI. Almost always.
I kind of feel like most people now would also, which is kind of sad, sad for the FBI. But I think most people are questioning it.
Would you be willing to go over there ever?
Ever? You mean, like, do you mean North Korea specifically?
Yes.
Or do you mean?
Oh, yes. Very specifically.
No. I would not go over there. I would never go there, especially now.
What if
now?
You went over there under the guidance of Dennis Rodman?
No. I would stay. I wouldn't go near Dennis Rodman. In America, I would not go near him. But I would not go near North Korea at all. I mean, if the regime topples, changes, and, you know, I don't know, 20 years from now.
What's the likelihood of that, though?
I don't know. I think it's possible. But in our lifetimes, I think. But, that's the only way I'd go.
Well, we were talking about this before the podcast started, that they exchanged flash drives back and forth to each other.
Yeah, like in the a huge part of the underground economy there is basically these flash drives with South Korean TV shows, movies, American movies, you know, just glimpses into the outside world that they're not supposed to see. It's a huge underground market. So I think the people there, especially the younger people, they know what's going on, you know.
And if they get caught, not only are they fucked.
Yeah, this is what I've read, and I don't know how it is now. It might be even worse now for all I know. But, if they get caught, they go to a labor camp for I don't know how long. It's like a three-generational thing. Their kids go to a labor camp there, and their parents will go. Like the whole family ends up being punished for their action, which is wild.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And when we hear about like dictatorships like that, we always think of it like that's from like the 40s. Like, you know, you think of it as
it is from the 40s. That's a thing, and it just has not changed over there. Yeah.
I just wonder what it would take for something like that to be toppled. And we were also talking before the podcast started about his uncle, apparently was planning some sort of a coup. So killed his uncle, killed his uncle's sons.
Yeah. I mean, well, one thing that happened when our movie was about to come out, there was like some expert on North Korea who said that it's important that the elite in Pyongyang see this movie, especially the people in the government and it working it, because it's so they're on such shaky ground right now that for them to see something like this could like really help in getting something to happen over there.
This is what Sony was saying?
No. This was like an expert on, like some professor or something on North Korea, which I thought was interesting. But, that kind of blew my mind when he said that.
Wow, that's great. Imagine if it did. Imagine if that was the catalyst.
If our ridiculous comedy,
Seth Rogen, James Franco movie was the catalyst for overthrowing the last great communist dictatorship.
Old
school communist dictatorship.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's all, you know, so much of it is this kind of deification, you know, of him. All of this stuff, you know, our movie, but not just that, even just glimpses into the outside world, it just chips away at that, you know, and he becomes who he is, you know, to these people and to other people and, you know, in the government, and that does not help their cause, you know, or the government, or Kim Jong-un's cause, you know.
What is the Dennis Rodman thing? What's...
Did you research
him at all when you did this?
I did, yeah. I mean... Kim Jong-un, and his father, Kim Jong-il, when he was alive, huge NBA fans. He was a huge basketball fan. He was like loved Michael Jordan. And there's a story of Kim Jong-un. Supposedly he was when he was a student, he went to like an international school in Switzerland. And there are accounts of him from other students. He'd just sit in class all day and draw doodle pictures of Michael Jordan, like literally in this class. So, like, he was obsessed with basketball and in that era. And I think, you know, that Bulls team was running things at the time. And, like, he was a huge Rodman fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
It's so crazy.
See Rodman over there hanging out with him is so surreal.
So, did you see that that press conference?
No.
There's a video of, like, a press conference where he's basically sitting there with the other some other players who went with him on this trip. And he's clearly drunk. And he's basically justifying his, you know, his actions by going over there and you know, becoming friends with this guy. And he's, like, drunk.
And this is a press conference from Korea or from America?
I think it was in Korea that they shot it. And you could see the players behind him, and they just look super uncomfortable, just looking around. Like,
well, how could you not be super uncomfortable? First of all, hanging out with Dennis Rodman would make you super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Dennis Rodman calling a press conference.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it the top one or the
that top one.
Oh,
what up?
Look who's here. Eddie Wong in the house.
Dude,
what's up, bro?
I'm the worst, man. I'm the fucking worst.
Dude, this is L.A. The traffic is insane.
You also fucking... I'm an idiot that lost my car in a fucking parking garage.
Did you?
Yeah, man. I was running up and down the wrong parking garage.
Were you like along 3rd Street, like one of those garages?
Yeah. Like the promenade. And they got three garages that look the same. And I was running up and down. I'm like, where the fuck is my car? It was right here. And then they were like, you know, there's another parking garage.
That's hilarious.
My bad, dude.
No worries, man. We kick things off. Randall, we're good.
Nice.
We had to cover the interview anyway. We had to go over all the crazy shit that he's been going through.
Yeah.
Artist formerly known as Kim Jong-un.
Did you at any point in time feel like you fucked up?
No, man. You know... No. This is the thing. I wasn't, like, scared for my life or anything like that.
I'm scared for your life.
But this is the thing. There were enough people like you, friends, family, people who were genuinely scared for my life that it got me thinking, like, should I be scared for my life?
Well, you had Secret Service at the
crib. We had guards at the house.
What?
Yeah. Sony provided us guards.
For how long?
It's like a couple weeks.
What the fuck, Sony?
At first, I was like, we don't need guards. Seriously, we don't need guards. They're like, let us just give you some guards just for peace of mind. I was like, all right. And then one day they were just gone. Like a few weeks later, they were gone. And I was thinking, oh, my God, where are the guards? I need the guards. You know, like I was just so, you know, I felt so protected by them when I wouldn't have otherwise. You know, I just got used to, and then my friends being so concerned for me. It just kind of got me paranoid, you know?
Did anyone contact you? Did you get any threats? Or did anybody... No? No one on Twitter, like, pretended to be from North Korea and fucked with you?
No.
We should have done it to him.
Dude. I would get, like, spam mail, like I always get. And I would think twice. I'd be like, wait a minute. Is this, like, regular spam? Or is this, like, hack into my email, destroy my life spam, you know?
Right.
But I didn't know. I would never have. I just kind of deleted it, like I always do, you know.
Yeah, you're always gonna. That could I was be paranoid, totally though. Unrelated.
Yeah, yeah, most likely. But I, you know, I got paranoid. I got paranoid after a while, and then the movie came out. And like we were talking about earlier, it just all died out. Like the dust settled really quickly. It was like crazy. It was like the biggest news, and then all of a sudden, I don't know.
It seems like things just die quick today.
Yeah.
Because there's so much new scandal coming down every day. There's always something new, nutty dick pics, sex scandal, something horrible happens. You know, ISIS cuts somebody's head off, something. Yeah. You know, there's always some
Cosby,
new thing.
Another woman comes
Yeah, 1 year. The things that used to happen in 5 years happen in 1 year now.
They happen in a day. It's weird.
Yeah, it's kind of insane.
Yeah, things are accelerating for sure. Yeah.
Even when I travel, every city I go to, there's a pocket of every city that looks the same. Like that same arts district is in every fucking city with the same stores, the same kids, the same clothes.
And by contrast, the same Applebee's, the same Walmart, the same Target. I mean, if you're in a Target anywhere in America, you feel like you're in the same spot.
You're in the same spot. Yeah.
How the fuck did you go from being a chef to being on a sitcom? What the hell's going on, man? How did you run this, man?
Dude, I guess we kind of ran the table.
Yeah.
We fucking definitely, we hit for the cycle the last 2 years.
You were at a TED Talk?
Yeah.
I mean,
That's when I met you. Yeah. You know, the deal for this show was cut the day I met you.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, you were part of this, Joe.
That's amazing.
You're part of this.
I feel responsible.
You're part of Asian history.
Hey, you are. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Joe.
So
yeah.
How did it go down?
Well, what happened was I was at TED, and then there was this producer, Melvin Marr, who my boy Jay gave the book to. So he read the book, and he was, like, looking at these, you know, stats and demographics. They send those things in the studio, like, pay attention to the Asian market. They got fucking money now. You know what I mean? Like, people are buying fucking soy products. So he got one of those things that was a directive or some study saying, look, there's a lot of Asian viewers. You know, we should make some content for this. The book landed on his table within, like, the similar amount of time. I was in Long Beach. I was doing the show with you, and he met me that night.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. And you got in trouble for doing the show, right? Because you left TED, and they got pissed at you for...
Yeah. They were mad because I did, you know, I did the number one podcast in the world, Joe Rogan. And then I also did DVD Asa. They weren't too happy about that. And I went to take the meeting with Melvin, and they were like, you should be here politicking with these TED people, sucking this Scientology dick.
Wait, did they have like...
I was like, no Scientology deals.
Was it that, did they have like a specific thing planned for you, or they just wanted you to hang out?
No, I had already given my talk, and then it was like, dude, we looked like slow children. They had us with signs and like neck lanyards with your photo and like speaker, and then these people would be like donor, and we were supposed to like show more love to the donors
and I was just like, man, the rings.
I was like, this is weird.
It was the beginning of my understanding, my journey of trying to understand where TED has gone, like where it what it started out as and what it is now. And you were very illuminating.
Yeah, it was cool because after me and Sarah Silverman kind of shit on it, there's been lots of people that come out being like, yo, they fucked with my speech. They told me to say this. They took this down. And
did you find that during your speech? Were they like putting their hands in it? Or?
Yeah, they definitely tried to edit it. I mean, it's everywhere. The last few years I've started to realize everywhere you go besides like pretty much Vice, I guess, is they try to put their dick in your ear. Everywhere you go, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, hey, come here, kid. Come here. Ah, fuck.
Yeah. You want to get rich, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's only one way.
Yeah.
Suck that donor dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they would make you stay with somebody else, too. They made you stay in a room.
Yeah, it was weird. We were like adults, and they had us rooming, and I was rooming with this other guy who was super nervous about his speech, and I was just like, this is bugged. It's bugged out. You gave me a box of Kind bars, and I'm supposed to be cool with this?
And then they get mad when you go off to do other shit. It's just very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, you should sign up to be a TED speaker 1 year just so you could, like, do the expose.
Not interested. I speak too much as it is. I'm highly overexposed. So, fresh off the boat, when does this start airing?
February 4th.
Is this CBS?
ABC.
ABC. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
February 4th. And is everything in the can already? You guys done, or are you filming right now?
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
Done shooting.
How many episodes did you guys do?
13.
Yeah.
So they decided to film 13 and then air. They did a pilot. They liked it, and then they just shot 13.
Ordered 12 more, yeah.
That's nice. Yeah. That's nice. If they pick up what they call the back nine and give you a full order of 22, when do you know about all that?
I think May. And we find out in May.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to do the back. I think it'll be just the next
season.
That's cool. So what's that experience been like?
Man, Randall, you go first. I've been talking about it too much. Randall, go first.
Well, I mean...
Also, the eldest Asian goes first.
That's right. Respect. That's right. you know, it's for me, it was fun. It was, you know, there was a lot of challenges. I was, you know, I've been kind of the middleman, I feel like, in a lot of the situations. So, like, you know, talking to the producers, talking to the other actors, talking to Eddie, and, like, you know, trying to kind of navigate everything and hearing out their issues and their problems. And so, I don't know. That I think with any TV show, they're always, like, politics and issues. But when you have one that's specifically based on a memoir of a real-life person, you know, there's a lot of kind of bumps in the road and a lot of things to work out. And we definitely had those issues. But with that being said, I mean, I had a great time. The cast has been great. The crew, I had fun. I had fun. And I think it's like it's a good show, you know. It's a groundbreaking show, like in terms of just Asians on TV, you know.
Well, Margaret Cho was the first.
Yeah.
She had that show, All-American Girl.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah. I was around back then. I remember it. I was friends with Margaret. And the whole thing, when it went down, it was weird. They were telling you got to lose weight. You got to do this. Dude, you got to dress different. You can't have a fat Asian on TV. Her stories about her are pretty fucking crazy.
It's bad, dude.
They had like an Asian consultant or something on that show, basically telling them how to be Asian, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we had those weird-ass accent coaches, too, though. The dude was super cool. He was a super cool dude.
Yeah.
But there was a dude that was literally like, Randall, your accent, like checking on the accents and shit.
That super cool guy, friend of mine, even.
But
it was like, it definitely got me in my head for that pilot. So after, once we got into the series, I was like, no, I'm going to learn this. I'm going to learn this on
what
my
was,
own.
What was the accent? Were you trying to learn a Chinese accent?
It was like supposed to be a Mandarin Taiwanese accent.
But
I feel like there isn't one.
Everyone
speaks in their own fucked up
way.
That's what I learned.
It's like there is, because I went to so many people to get like coaching, you know, like to get specifically experts or actors who could really do it, because there were no dialect coaches who could do it. But they all had different approaches. And I was like, there is not one way to do an accent.
It's basically a cottage industry for Asian people to just G off and be like, oh, no, I know this accent thing. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's fly lice.
R's are L's. R's are L's. They're like, no, it's not always.
So they're just running the game and the white people are like, okay, he's really legit. He understands.
Yeah.
We have an Asian accent consultant.
Yeah, they hired this guy. He was like an actor.
He's an
actor. The guy's an actor. And he was like, I got hired to consult on the accent because I'm Taiwanese. And it was just like, yo, this is so bunk.
But what do they try to do with you? They try to fuck with your accent? Because you have a New York accent.
No. I just do voiceover.
He narrates.
I just do voiceover and give people a hard time. That's pretty much my job on the show.
So you don't act on the show?
No, I'm the voice.
Oh.
Yeah.
So does someone play you?
Yeah, there's a 12-year-old kid who's a really cool kid.
Yeah,
great kid. Wow. So it's sort of like that Chris Rock show. Everybody hates Chris?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I was under the impression that you were acting in it. I was confused.
He is, but like voice.
Voice acting.
Yeah.
And who do you play?
I play the dad.
You play his dad?
Yeah.
That's a weird relationship.
It's weird.
It's a weird relationship.
It's funny because my mom on the show is the same age as me now.
Oh,
but
wow.
But super cool. Like, you know, the actors on the show were incredible. Like, the casting on the show, I think, is my favorite part of it.
Yeah.
I'm not just saying it because homie's here. Like, we really get along. We hang out. We eat Jamaican beef patties.
That's what we
do. Are you worried that 12-year-old kid is going to be like that 2.5 men kid? Just fucking get crazy?
Yes. Absolutely. He already gets crazy, but I love the kid.
He's a great kid. He's, like, amazing, but he's a real kid. He's not, like, an actor. He didn't have hardly any experience going in, and that's part of the reason why we loved him so much. Yeah. He was just raw.
He's just a Brooklyn Chinese kid that went to a cold acting at casting, and then we saw his tape. And I remember watching. Did you get to see his audition?
I was there for some of the early ones, but I didn't see the original.
Dude,
one.
His audition is so funny. They're like telling him to say things, and he's swinging at the camera with his arm. He's looking in the wrong direction. He just doesn't give a fuck. Yeah. And I saw the tape. I was like, we have to cast this kid.
Well, just personality.
Just personality. He couldn't be bothered. He could not be bothered. And even when Randall may hate us at times because the kid will be bouncing off the walls. Like, we basically just captured this real kid on camera. Totally. Like, all right, cool. Start, stop.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But the other kids, like, they were all polished actors, you know, with clean line reads, you know, like, and emoting right at the right, you know, right at the right word. And it just didn't feel like.
Yeah.
When a show comes around that's very specifically Asian and it's hiring all these Asian people, there's a tremendous amount of attention from the Asian community. Yeah. Like, everybody gets very excited. Like, I have Asian friends that were actors. And they would get very bummed out that there's no roles for Asian. Yeah. And they would get really pissed off. And I would bring up, like, when John Wayne played Genghis Khan. Fucking boiling red and
Breakfast
angry.
At Tiffany's,
Mickey Rooney.
Yeah. Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan was a white guy.
Yeah, with the tape on the eyes.
Yeah.
So now that there's, like, an actual Asian show, like, what has the response been? Like, you're an actor.
I mean, it's like The Wire, dude. Basically, every Asian person is hitting you up. Like, yo, can I be Bubbles?
Everybody want to be Bubbles. Yeah,
exactly, man.
It's been like, you know, I mean, overwhelming. Like, just positivity and negativity and you know, skepticism. And it's everything. It's because it's the only one, you know.
Is there any, like, inter-Asian, like, anger, like, you are being a Korean guy playing a guy who's from Taiwan?
You know, I haven't experienced it personally. I'm sure it's out there. I haven't experienced it personally. I had my own issues with that too. Like, I actually went to Eddie early on after I found out the show was being picked up to pilot. I was like, I don't think that this doesn't feel right. I don't think I should be playing this part.
Really?
Yeah. Randall's super earnest about it.
Yeah, I like wigged out about it. I actually had a nervous breakdown about it. Not a nervous, a panic attack.
Really?
I had a panic attack.
How does that go?
Just like, I thought I was going to die. Like, literally, like the night before, I was like, couldn't sleep. And I had to keep moving. I was like, and I knew it was because of this, because I was just so in my, I was like, I don't think I should be playing this part. This is like a big moment.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason that got me to that thought, was because after the show got picked up, it was already all over the internet, like amongst Asian people, like super excited for it, you know.
Super
The Great Yellow Hope shit. It was just like everybody was so like, much. Oh my God, our dicks are all going to get bigger. On February 4th, my dick is going to be 6.5 inches. Everybody going to have 6.5 inch dicks on February 4th.
So you, it's fascinating.
So
that
I was like, oh man, I don't know if I should be. I don't know if I'm the one, you know.
And it's just because of the fact that you're Korean playing a guy who's Chinese,
I mean, that was a big part of it. Also, I had my, you know, I had issues with the character, and we talked about it. Yeah. And I had like, I was like, man, I don't know. I just don't feel like this is the right.
I think
for me.
The thing was Randall is so earnest, and the reason, like, I've really bonded with Randall through the whole thing is there's a lot of people that'll lie to you in Hollywood. There's a lot of fake motherfuckers out here.
Wait a minute. What are you saying? Hold on. I can't be a part of the show anymore. I gotta go. I have a meeting.
But no, like, we would talk really openly and honestly about the script, like the things that didn't seem to, like, represent my pops that weren't totally there, because, you know, network shows, they always have, like, a really powerful woman and a kind of a schlubby dude. Yeah. My dad walked around the crib in his underwear with an AK. Chilling.
Did he really? He had an AK?
Yeah, he cocked it on my friend once when we were just, like, watching cartoons. And my dad was like, ha-ha! And I was just like,
whoa.
Yo.
His dad is a badass. I mean, like, I met him. The dude is, I mean, not only a badass, he's just like a dynamic. He's like Eddie. He's like this dynamic person, you know.
He didn't mean it bad, because my friend had been asking him about it, and he always wanted to see it. So my dad one day just came out with it and was like, bong, bong.
But, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and I we don't see much of that in the character of the show. But, you know, with that being said, like, you know, my issues were just like, I don't want him to be like, you know, always like the funny one or always the inept kind of classic sitcom dad. I want him to kind of, I want him to do well. I want him to work hard. I want to be a good example for the kids, you know, because, again, we're the only Asian show.
Yeah,
it's important that, like, I don't just play that one lane. I want him to be more fleshed out, you know.
That is a real issue, right? If you're the only Asian show on television, you definitely don't want to be a negative stereotype.
Yeah.
You don't want to, like, play into all the bullshit that is already out there, the negative stereotypes.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's a tricky position, huh? Is that why you felt like you were real nervous about it, panic
attack? That was it. I mean, also, like, in combination with the accent, you know, if you have an accent, that's one thing.
Hit me with some of that accent.
No, I can't hit you with
that. Come on,
give me that duck sauce.
Give me
that duck
sauce, Randall. You're a professional.
But the thing...
Just say fuck you, Joe Rogan, with that
I'm
accent.
I'm not going to say that.
No? All right, man. Okay, just try it.
No, but
fuck you, Joe Logan.
Yeah, fuck you, Joe Logan.
It's Joe Logan in Chinglish.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you got an accent, and we've just seen throughout history, Hollywood history, it's like if there's an accent, this character's one-dimensional.
You know, David Cho had this fucking great post. There was one point in time we pulled his DVD ASA podcast off the air, and he put this great quote on his website about Jackie Chan. He goes, how come Jackie Chan never got to fuck or finger bang?
Yes.
Totally.
And he's going off this whole thing about everyone's afraid of the yellow man.
But
Everybody talks about fear of a black planet.
Romeo Must Die. That was a huge moment for, like, Asian kids.
Yeah.
Remember Jet Li and Aaliyah?
Yeah,
if you could have just made out with Aaliyah, I swear, like,
that
my sex life would have tripled. I would have done
triple
numbers.
And then we were
sitting
in that theater. They don't even, like, they don't even shake hands. Like, it's like,
no. What is that? What
and
is
that's,
that?
And that's Romeo and Juliet. That was like the...
What the fuck?
They don't even shake hands.
Yeah. Except for Walking Dead. That's the only time where the Asian guy wins.
But that's the thing, is, like, there had to be a zombie apocalypse for an Asian dude. For an Asian dude to get some pussy, it had to be a zombie apocalypse. That dude had to be the last motherfucker.
But there's a few white dudes that want to fuck that chick on that show. I mean, she's the hottest chick on that show by far.
By far. Yeah.
By far.
By far.
And that's a big victory for the Asian
culture. That was Asian. We caught one there.
We caught one. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of anger and resentment in the Asian community, too, when Asian girls will exclusively date white guys.
Yeah, I used to get mad, but now I'm just like, it's cool.
Yeah.
There's billions of us.
That is a weird thing, though, right? I mean, it's a common occurrence.
When I was in college, that would definitely, like, get me upset, hit home. But I'm the same. Like, I'm just like, dude, it's, you know, it's fine.
My thing is, everybody deals with their identity in their own way.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're not loving someone for the right reasons, it may rear its head in 3 months, 6 months, 6 years. But eventually, you're going to deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's just not my job to be judge and jury with shorties and white dudes. It's kind of, you know.
Shorties.
that's your prerogative, man. But I used to get tight in college.
Yeah.
You get angry?
Yeah.
Tight in college. That's
But I was always about white chicks with big butts anyway, so, you know.
Who isn't?
Yeah, exactly.
Pogs
is a number one drop down on Bang Bros, I think.
Yeah, that's a perfect ass white girl if you don't know what PAWG means.
Yep.
Yeah, there's something about that. Well, it's just such an anomaly, you know? You find a white girl with a perfect ass. We were in, Tony Hinchcliffe and I were in this coffee shop the other day. We met this black girl from Kenya who, she had an ass. She turned around and we both went like that, just... Like, looked at each other like, Jesus, is that real? And then we talked about it for like an hour afterwards. Like, you don't ever see that on any other nationality. It's only black chicks from Africa. Mm. I mean, she had – her ass was like in the middle of her back, you know.
West Indian will come up with it. Like Caribbean West Indian, you'll get it.
But right.
Right now, there's a lot of chicks with fake butts out there. If you look at Instagram sometimes, there's a lot of these girls that, you know, they never showed the backside. Then all of a sudden, like 6 weeks, there's a gap in photos and then bang. And you're like, whoa.
Is that – you mean people here in America? That's a thing?
Yeah, there's a few girls in New York that my friends –
I know in Brazil that's like –
Yo, it's huge in Brazil and Colombia, but New York now, there's a lot of New York girls with fake butts.
Well, you know what's fucked up about that is like a girl can get her butt big. By working out.
Right.
You can lift weights. Like, you can't do anything about your breasts. If you want your breasts to be larger, I don't think they have a solution to that yet. But if you want your ass to be big, all you got to do, you lazy bitch, just do some squats. You don't have to stick plastic in your ass.
Exactly. My ass is tight. I got the workout.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I knew a dude who had chest implants.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he got chest implants.
That's weird.
Yeah, he was a comedian. He decided he wanted to be a sitcom star, and he had a chest, and instead of working out, I mean, I think he worked out a little bit, but he had pec implants.
I feel like Fat Jew. I think I talked to him. I think he wants breast implants.
Who's Fat Jew?
This comedian, Fat Jew. He's awesome.
That's his name?
Yeah, that's his name. Yeah, he sends me photos like this, dude. He sends me wild photos of turkey testicles. This is super weird stuff, man. But he's the best. Turkey testicles. You have to see this. He sent this to me for Thanksgiving, but yeah.
Okay. So it's a turkey with his balls poking out of the hole.
It's a turkey. He cut out a hole and just put his balls
That's
in the
basically
middle.
A photo of his balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just an
It
excuse.
Was an acceptable way for him to send his balls to me.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is he a guy in New York?
Yeah, yeah. He's in New York. He's been a homie for a few years. He was like in this rap group Team Facelift.
Yeah,
super futuristic dude. You gotta have him on the show.
All right, I'm in. Yeah. Fat Jew.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's my man.
Strange name.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys have been filming this for how many months now?
Ooh, since...
We ended right before Christmas.
Yeah.
And did it go through, like... I've been on a sitcom news radio from the beginning to like one of the first episodes to the end. It's like they grow and everybody sort of finds their own rhythm and people get fired and new writers come in. Do you guys go through all that?
We didn't like that only because we didn't start airing while we were in production. I feel like those things happen when it starts airing and then the feedback comes and you know the ratings are like on the edge, and then they start panicking. Oh, we got to make changes, but we're literally in a bubble, kind of.
It's a gift and a curse that you're mid-season. Mm. Like when you're mid-season, they buy all the episodes, and they're gonna all air.
Yeah.
So,
did they do a pilot first?
Yeah, the pilot's great. They did the pilot. The pilot's actually my favorite episode of the whole season.
So you did a pilot, and then how long before they decided to pick it up?
Like a month or I don't know.
So you had a little bit of a break?
Yeah, we finished it. I feel like we delivered it in March, right? And then we found out in May.
Beginning
of
May.
So like 2 months? Yeah, two months.
I didn't think it was going to get picked up. Not because I didn't think it was good.
Nothing gets picked up.
Nothing gets picked up, number one. And no Asian family sitcom gets picked up.
One, ever.
One, 20 years ago. Yeah.
See, it was fun. I knew it would get picked up. I told everybody. I was like, yo, man, I see you at Chase Bank, motherfucker. See you at Chase Bank.
Eddie knew. Yeah. I was just like, you know, I mean, I've been in the trenches as an actor for a long time. I'm like, these things don't happen, you know.
Yeah.
They don't happen. And then it happened. I was like.
Well, they occasionally happen.
Yeah.
I feel like you will shit to happen. Like, with my whole life, I just feel like, you know, you got to, like, will it and just believe it. And if you don't, then it really won't. It has to, the mojo all has to line up.
Yeah.
It helps. Yeah. It helps if you believe it. But it doesn't. There's a lot of people out there that watched The Secret and thought, I'm going to change my life.
Yeah.
And then nothing fucking happened.
Yeah. No, I think you have, it's essential to believe, and then there's still a lot of shit. But if you don't believe, you good luck.
Yeah, there's a vibration that you have to catch. You have to be on a frequency, and all these things have to align together in order for it to be successful.
Yeah, and you can feel it. Like, you can really feel the energy. Like, we had a good energy on our show, and I think it's because everyone, this was the biggest thing anyone, well, not you had a lot of other hits, but like Constance Hudson, the kids, you know, it's Melvin, the producer's first thing that's his own. It was the biggest thing I've done. And, you know, for everybody, it was just like humbling to be there, happy to get there.
Yeah.
And then once we got there, we were like, let's wreck shop. You know, let's do this.
Well, you should act, man. You got such a great personality.
Thanks, man.
I tell him that all the time. I tell him, I'm writing something for you, Ed.
Well, that's,
I'm gonna write
that's why it made sense to me that you were on a sitcom. Like, there's a lot of chefs, if you told me they were on a sitcom, I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Like Emeril.
Yeah.
Bam! Remember when Emeril had a sitcom?
Emeril had a sitcom?
I didn't know that.
Exactly. Yeah, Emeril had a fucking sitcom. I think it was called Emeril. Yeah, it was like some fucking NBC disaster.
Fuck.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he's actually pretty fucking cool in person. Like, I chill with Emeril on Top Chef. Dude is, especially in New Orleans. I got to hang with him in New Orleans. Cool dude.
That's his spot, right?
Yeah, that's his spot. But like, no, I told my agent, I was like, yo, if there's any roles out there for an Asian Joe Pesci, fucking sign me up. That's what I want to be.
An Asian Joe Pesci, Goodfellas or Joe Pesci, Lethal Weapon?
Oh, like My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, I mean, you could totally act. You, that's why when I heard that you were doing it, I was like, oh, wow, look at this fucking versatile motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, I'm voice acting, but no, I gotta do the acting. It'll be fun. I'm excited.
The voice acting, too, though, I mean, that's like, I feel like that was a, I mean, that wasn't in the original,
we
pilot.
Put it in after.
It kind of came in like, how can we make this better? And then they came up with the idea. We got to have Eddie. And that, like, changed it. It, like, really made it, solidified the show, you know, and framed it in the right way.
It happened in the edit. I think it was just in the edit. They were like, yo, you should fucking Kevin Arnold this thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I was so excited. I was really excited. They told him I was playing ball when Melvin called me and was like,
I like how you did this. I was playing ball.
Getting buckets.
Yeah, is there any way they could write you in? I mean, who would you play if you were going to be on that show?
You're like cousin Eddie would be sick, or cousin Alan. I got a cousin Alan or something, but
yeah, like a cousin.
Be the kid's cousin.
Yeah, you could be like kid's cousin that's always giving them like sneaky advice, getting them in trouble, you know, leading them astray.
Sure. Yeah, even temptation. In real life, man, the kid was telling me, he's like, "Yo, I like girls now." I'm like, "Word, that's great. That's great. That's great. That's really great. You like girls." And I was like, "Do you have like a girlfriend or whatever?" He's like, "No, there's this girl I like, but I'm afraid to talk to her." And I was like, "Well, what are you going to do then? You should go talk to her." And he's like, "No, no, no, I don't want to talk to her." And I was like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And he's like, "I kind of want to touch her." And I was like, "Good, good." So I'm like, "Yo, when she gets out of class, just kind of bump into her boobs with your elbow."
No, don't tell
him. And
he's
like, "What?" I was like, "No, yeah, you got to just kind of bump into the boobs."
You can't tell him that, and you definitely can't admit on the internet.
Why?
Because
you
if he goes and does that now, that's like sexual assault.
No, it's not that. You did that in middle school. Didn't you come out of like seventh grade?
I lived in a different world, my friend. This is the world of the internet
and
social justice warriors. You just asked that dude to commit rape.
No, no, no.
In this world?
No,
this day and age,
you are
illegally touching a sexual organ with your elbow on purpose. It's not an accident. You're pretending it's an accident.
Fuck, man. Do I have to apologize?
We live in a dark world.
I'm so sorry, boobs.
We live in a dark world.
To all those boobs out there.
Well, especially if the girl doesn't want him to touch her boobs, then it's really sexual assault.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure the girl, he's a good kid. I'm sure she wouldn't mind it.
That's not sure enough.
No?
No.
Randall, you never like kind of just brushed up against the pair?
Don't admit to it. Even if you did, don't say it.
I cannot recall.
Fine, I'm the only one.
I cannot recall.
Fine, I'm the only one that was running my Nautica competition fleece against.
People will stop beating that Cosby horse and start running towards you with sticks.
Oh,
no, man. No, hey, I'm not on that. I'm not on that. No, come on.
It doesn't matter. There's so many people out there that are looking to be angry. They're looking to find something. They can't brush it off as something innocent or joking. Around, and especially when it comes to something like asking a young kid, giving him advice how to bump into a chick's tits.
Maybe I did fuck up.
You fucked up.
Fuck.
It doesn't matter, which is what you tell him to do. Tell him to let her watch him on TV, and then she'll probably like him. It's compelling.
All right, I'm going to have to call Hudson tonight and be like, yo, call remember her. That technique I told you about kind of brushing up against
new the plan.
Boots? New plan. New plan. Uncle Joe wants her to watch the show first.
Trust Uncle Joe. Tell him the pussy bus is coming, all right? They're loading it up right now. Once you get on TV, they're going to want to brush their tits up against you. Then it's way better.
Wait for them to brush up against you.
That's sexual assault. Advice. Nobody complains about that sexual assault. There's not a guy alive has ever complained about a girl brushing her tits up against
you. But I remember the first time I saw up a skirt was incredible. I was in Earth Space Science class. And I would there was this one Colombian chick that was so fly. Like, always came done up, was the first one to be wearing heels in school.
How old was she?
Well, we were both 14. So we were both 14. She might have been 15.
Heels?
She was wearing heels. And I remember she had this like houndstooth dress on. And I was just like, yo, her legs look like fucking hams right now. They look like Christmas honey baked hams in there. And I could not stop looking. And I remember she turned to me, smiled, and just opened her legs and nodded. And I was like, looked. And it was just peach fuzz and bear. And I was just, oh.
Life change.
Whoa, she had no underwear on?
No underwear.
Oh my God.
She just flashed it. I was 14 and 14. I was just like, and I was like, me? She was like, yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, hey. Like, this is for you.
Yeah, and I was cooked. I couldn't talk to her.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was my first time.
I'm thinking about it.
That was my first time. But,
wow.
Yeah. So maybe I should have just told Hudson, just keep staring.
Just be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Even staring, they call that eye rape.
Oh yeah. You're gonna have to issue another.
You've been reading the New Yorker?
No, I like to I like to read super progressive websites where they're just out of their fucking mind.
Yeah,
it's all, mostly people that no one wants to fuck, and what they're trying to do is establish these parameters for what is appropriate and not appropriate. It's mostly against
men. I think that's the thing, though, that doesn't work, because, like, I'm all about women's rights and ideologies and all those things. Is I just went and did a whole piece in Japan about why the birth rate is declining there. And I was, like, championing the fact that we've asked women to go into the workplace but then not redistribute the duties of home and child-rearing and child-bearing. Mm. And it's just like we have to redistribute the duties that are traditionally left for women because they're working now. We all got to share. But then when you just have rules of, like, don't do this and don't do that, you're not really understanding the relationship of, like, men, women, and society. You're just setting weird-ass rules that make everybody upset and uncomfortable.
Well, it's also, like, who's setting those rules? Like, and why? Like, one of them is about drinking. Like, they're saying that men and women, when they're having sex, when they're this is a hilarious blog that I like to read occasionally. And they were trying to say that if men and women, if you're drinking and you have sex with someone, it's rape. Including if a woman is sober and the man is drunk. If the woman has sex with a drunk man, she's raping him. She's raping him, which is fucking hilarious. What? It is hilarious.
That might be my favorite position.
If you're drunk,
being drunk, her being sober, that is my favorite position.
The language that they use is that if you're drunk, they put you in a position where you cannot consent. You're not able to consent because you're drunk.
Wow. I mean,
which is it's first of all, it's rude towards women because some women have to be drunk. They it's a strategy. They do it on purpose. They want to be drunk so that they can deal with the fact they're going to let some dude fuck them. You know, right? A lot of dudes are annoying as shit, and women get horny, and they're like, God, I want someone to fuck me, but I don't want this idiot to throw a few shots back.
Yeah, we all do that. Yeah. Let's do it. You know, I can understand it if it's like in fraternities and sororities because the rampant rape on college campuses is insane right now because at that age, just nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
But like adults, man, like who's having sex without drinking? Seriously.
That's a good.
Like without some combination of like wine, Xanax, or weed, like nobody's having sex.
Sober people.
We would be Japan.
Yeah. Right. Sober people. You know, people who are like in the program or something. Alcoholics Anonymous people. What do they do?
Oh, they have fucking terrible sex.
Go jogging. Get a runner's high first.
Man.
Hold their breath.
Yeah.
Go spinning and then smash. Then you got to shower. Then you got to shower twice. What the fuck is up with that?
Yeah, and the high might wear off.
Coffee sex.
A runner's high doesn't last nearly as long as like an edible.
It's a nice cold brew.
Coffee right sex. Yeah. I would get crazy lockjaw and dry mouth with coffee sex.
For real.
If I drank coffee and then she sat on my face, there would be serious problems.
Well, if you drink coffee, your cum is more likely to get a girl pregnant.
Really?
Yeah, the sperm is more active.
Drink green tea.
Green tea. Even same thing. Yeah. Caffeine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's caffeine. Caffeine makes your sperm more active.
That's for
real. Nothing is safe these days.
Yeah.
Nothing's fucking safe.
Nothing's safe. There's nothing safe, including sex. Yeah. It's not safe. So, point being, don't tell this 12-year-old kid the wrong shit, because as the climate becomes more and more hostile towards men, it's going to get crazier and crazier.
You guys really think we should ask the Twitters and just
don't
be like,
ask Twitter anything ever.
Don't ask. Yeah, so I'm just going to correct this and tell him, just stare and tell her to watch your show.
Just stay offline. Don't Google your name. keep moving.
Don't exist.
Just keep moving.
Oh, man.
Well, the things that you used to get away with when you know, like natural boy-girl type shit, it's like, you know, people take offense to that stuff now.
Yeah, like the Annie Hall thing when he goes to grab her.
I don't remember Annie Hall.
Oh, it's great. He's like, it's like Alvy Singer as a kid and he goes to kiss the girl and then the girl's like, even Freud talks about a latency period, Alvy.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't remember it. I saw it so long ago.
It's a great movie.
Woody Allen. Here's another one.
Yeah.
Woody Allen.
Bad example. Yeah. I shouldn't put myself worse. Oh, fuck.
You know what I'm saying?
We should just change the subject.
Have you ever seen those photos of Woody Allen with the girl on his lap when she was a little girl, when he was the dad, and then the two of them together?
I can't see that.
His wife now.
Well, she was sitting on his lap when she was a little girl at a basketball game, and then many years later, she's sitting next to him holding his hand as his wife.
It's crazy.
It's like, yo.
It's weird.
Well, Well, that's seeing it laid out like that. It's very dark. Yeah. It's like there's one thing, like if you hear about it, like, well, maybe he didn't spend a lot of time with her. But then you see the photo with her on his lap at a basketball game. And then.
Yeah. And when you see them now, even in the garden, it's bugged. It's totally bugged out.
It's amazing that he goes out with her. I mean, yeah, that, he's got mad balls.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's got crazy balls. Do you need to be ringside or courtside that fucking bad?
With your daughter wife? No.
Stay in the nosebleeds.
Just cuffing with your daughter wife?
No. Don't even go. Don't watch even it go. At home. God. They have it on TV.
Yeah, you got voodoo.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? It just seems like it's not a good move.
But I don't think people care.
He got
much.
No fucks given. That dude just does not care.
I think because of that, people don't care. I mean, he just got a big deal. I don't know if you read about like
Amazon.
Amazon TV deal. Like, he's doing like shows for Amazon now.
It's yeah.
Like, not even a thing, you know.
Well, he's a really good director. I mean, he writes and directs a new movie every year. He's Have you ever seen how he does everything, too? He does it all with a typewriter.
No way.
Oh, yeah. There's a video. See if you can pull it up, Jamie. It's a fascinating video. Woody Allen explaining his writing process. He's got a video. He's got a typewriter. And then when he does changes, when he does any sort of a change to one of his scripts, he cuts a piece of paper out and fucking tapes it down over the other place.
I mean, him and Wes Anderson, definitely my favorite director.
Yeah, Woody Allen and his typewriter. It's kind of fucking weird, man. I mean, I think this is one of the ways he avoids the internet. Look at this.
Right, to stay sane.
The house is always full of clarinet reeds every place. I bought this when I was 16. Still works like a tank. And it's a German typewriter. And it's an Olympia portable. I've had it my whole life. It cost me $40, I think. The guy told me it would be around long after my death. And I've typed everything... that I've written every script, every New Yorker piece, everything I've ever done on this typewriter. It used to have a metal piece on top covering this, which I lost 30 years ago.
One advantage, obviously, to a word processor is you can electronically cut and paste. What do you do when you have to cut and paste?
If I'm typing something, I have my scissors here, and I have a lot of these things, these little stapling machines. So, if I'm typing something, I type the part that looks like this. You know, nobody can really type my stuff. It looks terrible on the page. So I have to type it because I have arrows and all kinds of things. But when I come to a nice part, then I cut that part off and staple it on to something else with this. I mean, it's very primitive.
Look at
I know,
that.
But it works very well for me.
This dude is sewing screenplays.
You know, I mean, I can touch things. So there's no problem.
How bizarre.
Yo, I fucking love it. I love this dude. Like, he's just so... you can't forgive any of that shit. It's really, really fucked up. I think people just aren't shocked by it. Because he's such an idiosyncratic, like, weird dude. It doesn't nothing with him surprises anybody.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever seen his old stand-up?
I have a record of his, like an old record of his. And I mean, it was pretty good. I mean, it's like weird stories.
Well, he's a fucking pervert, man.
Yeah.
He was always a pervert. Yeah. There's some stand-up of his. You know that stand-up? Black and white is near a staircase. It's from old, just look like rare Woody Allen stand up.
Well,
like
all his work is about sex and psychology. Yeah. All of it. Bananas.
With
sleeper.
Younger women. Like, that's like a theme.
Well, he's a pervert, man. Just like it's a rare old piece. That's it. 65 rare. It's hilarious. Listen to him talk.
Museum of Art, which is this fabulous museum of art. And when I was younger, I used to hang out a lot. The museum in search of a meaningful social relationship. So, I used to look for girls at the museum. And I saw on the wall once a nude by Rubens, but a real succulent nude. A naked huntress stabbing to death a warthog. And I got very emotionally involved with the painting, you know. And two guards had to restrain me. Tried to lick some of the oil off the canvas.
He's a creeper.
So I was thinking to myself, at that time, where is it that I could meet the kind of girl that would pose for that type picture? And in my neighborhood, there's an art supply shop that deals in offbeat things. And I run down there, and I get the name of an artist model off the wall. And I call her up. And I came on very strong like an artist. You know, I used a lot of very artistic terms like brush, I said, and easel. I was just adorable. And we agreed on a price, you know, and hung up. And I got all dressed up in my smock and beret, you know, and little Harvey's Bristol cream on the hair. You know? I'm too much what I want to be. And I waited there. An hour later, there's a knock on my door, and standing there is this fabulous woman, but really sensational. And I let her in quickly, you know, and I locked the door with my police lock immediately. And I said to her, take off your clothes right away, because I don't know much about art, but I know what I like.
He was always a creeper, man.
A glimpse, yeah.
He was always a creeper. I mean, which is good and bad, you know.
Yeah. It's like that Cosby Spanish Fly bit. Yeah, I mean, like, that was telling.
Yeah,
like,
the Cosby Spanish Fly bit is dark.
Yeah.
That's dark.
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah, he talked about that on more than one occasion, too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, there was another thing. He talked about Spanish Fly in an interview. He was doing an interview with someone. He talked about Spanish Fly.
Like a casual interview?
A panel. Like, doing a panel on a talk show. And he talked about Spanish Fly.
Oh, man. That's weird.
Was just like a part of his daily life.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the fuck that was. You know, we're never going to hear it from his mouth, which is too bad. Because, yeah. I mean, it's almost like, you ever see that documentary, Iceman, Portrait of a Serial Killer?
No. It's on Netflix, though. I know what you're talking about.
It's an HBO documentary where they sat down with this guy who was a notorious hitman, killed a bunch of people. And they sat down with him and talked to him about how it started, who's the first person he killed, what was his methods, the whole thing. And you hear the guy talk, and you hear his mentality, and you understand where he was coming from, and he's like, whoa. Like, you just have a glimpse into the eyes of a monster, and you kind of understand, like, how it went down. Because we don't often get a chance to hear interviews from serial killers or hitmen or whatever.
Yeah.
But to have Cosby sit down, if he ever did come clean, like maybe if they ever did arrest him, and he came clean, and he started talking about what he did or why he did it, or, you know, he couldn't help himself, or what was the impulse.
I mean, I can't imagine, because I don't think like that, but it's just like, maybe, I don't know, maybe some people think they're entitled to shit.
That's where it might be, right?
Like, that's my guess, is that either you have an impulse you can't control, but then it's like, how can you have so much control in the rest of your life? Then I start to think, like, you have self-control, so it can't be an impulse thing. It has to be that you feel you've justified this in your mind, and you feel entitled to this.
Well, he has always been a guy that's been known as being very arrogant, and a guy who is my manager met him, and he had a very, very poor opinion of him. He said in meeting him, he, like, treats everybody like he's a king.
Yeah.
And, like, you're supposed to have, like, a certain behavior towards him. You ever see the...
Yeah.
He shit on a lot of younger black comics, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, all of them. Gave him a heart.
All of them. Everyone is dirty. Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy, that famous bit that Eddie Murphy did in Eddie Murphy Raw, where he talked about he had to call up Richard Pryor because Bill Cosby saw his stand-up and called him up and chastised him. You know, and he called up Richard Pryor to ask him for advice. And Bill Cosby goes, "Do the people laugh? Did you get paid? Well, tell Bill to have a Coke and a smile and shut the fuck up." It's like a famous quote.
Dude, Fryer.
Pryor's the greatest.
The greatest.
Hands down, the greatest.
Well, I feel like there's two greatest of all time. I always say that Sam Kinison was the greatest for 1 year. For 1 year, I don't think anybody was ever stronger. Like, especially like in that time in 1986 or 1987.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he didn't sustain it. He just kept doing Coke and fucking his material went way downhill.
Yeah.
But over a long-term period of time, Pryor was the greatest and the most influential.
Yeah, hands down.
Everything that most people would hide, it was on stage.
Yeah.
He just said it. Like, he had nothing to hide, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he was a unique, unique talent, man. Yeah. Very unique guy. And, you know, he also was, like, unique in that he would be real honest about his drug use.
Yeah.
You know, the drug use thing was a very big part of his stand-up, you know? Especially after he tried to kill himself, you know?
Yeah.
And you never felt like he was telling jokes. It really just felt like you're just a naturally funny guy talking about deep, dark shit.
Yeah. It never felt like set up, punchline, set up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just talking. You know, even though you knew he was calculated in his delivery, it was just so comfortable. And it's hard to put it in perspective, because back then, if you listen to like some Cosby or some Richard Pryor, rather, from like 1981 or something like that, it's hard to put your brain back in 1981, because it was just a different time. The world was young. It was the media had not had the same influence that it has now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think your show, do you ever wonder, like, man, like, is your show going to get fucked with because it's censored? And do you ever think, like, maybe it would have been a freer show if I did it on Showtime or HBO? Did you think about doing it?
Yeah, we got offers from other production companies. And, you know, the thing for me was I wanted to fight this battle. I wanted to take the story to network television and be like, let's take this to Western Michigan. You know, like, going to cable, that's preaching to the choir. That's me, you, Randall, my friends. We all watch Showtime, HBO, Netflix. And, you know, I have the Vice show. But there's a huge difference in the people we're going to reach with this show and my Vice show.
Isn't the Vice show the same name?
No, they bought the name from Vice.
Oh.
So, yeah, yeah. I had licensed it to Vice, and then it got sold over. But it's cool. Vice was awesome because ABC needed the name. It was the name of the book. And for me, it was they were calling it Far East Orlando.
Far East Orlando?
Yeah. If it wasn't such a bad name, I wouldn't have taken the name from the Vice show. But, you know, Shane and those guys are great, man. Like, they really did me a favor. They didn't have to do that. And that's why I fuck with them so heavy.
Shane doesn't give a fuck.
He doesn't give a fuck. He does the right thing.
Legitimately doesn't give a fuck.
Shane does the right thing.
Yeah,
he's all awesome. The time.
I love that dude.
Yeah, and like, I'm very critical of, you know, my experience with 20th and ABC and those things. But, you know, I would never lie. Like, I'm not just here to say nice things about Vice. Those dudes always come through. They always do. They do the right thing. And so we put it on ABC because I was like, we can't go out with Far East Orlando.
Right.
That name was fucked.
Yeah. Far East Orlando.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Yeah. Is that I was like, just call it a chink's life, you know?
Yeah.
DreamWorks. Yeah. DreamWorks, a chink's life.
Did you grow up in Orlando? Is that why they did it?
Yeah. It
takes place in Orlando.
Yeah.
Like Orlando. In the 90s. Yeah.
Orlando's a dark place.
Dark fucking place.
People don't know.
No.
You know, you got Disneyland, and then everything that's outside of Disneyland is very strange.
I took a lot of ecstasy to stay positive.
In Orlando?
Yeah.
But you, when did you develop the New York accent?
I've always talked like this. It's
really?
Super fucking weird.
It's just into hip hop.
I think it's hip hop. It's watching so much basketball, and then it's my parents don't speak English at home, so my English is learned. So in a way, I think it's you choose the way you talk, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So it's just I just watched gangster movies, listen to hip hop, watch basketball, and it is what I've always sounded like this.
That's interesting, man.
Even when I was in Orlando, I remember there was a few girls who were like, "You from Brooklyn?" And I was like, "No." DC, Orlando, Pittsburgh, and then I've been in New York, Brooklyn for like 10 years, so then it just
crystallized.
Yeah.
It formed.
Yeah.
How long are you allowed to, like, how long do you have to live in a place before you accept the accent?
You know, man.
Like, if you're from Georgia and then you move to New Jersey and then you start talking like you're from New Jersey and then you go back to Georgia, they're going to go, "What the fuck, man?" Yeah.
But, you know, even if you spend a week in Atlanta, because in Atlanta you just tossed. It's just scissor up and alcohol all weekend. And you get so faded that I end up saying things a little weird even after a week in Atlanta.
You get that fucked up when you go to Atlanta?
I get fucked up in Atlanta.
I like Atlanta.
Shouts to Cooker. All right, my man Cooker. We went out to Follies last time. It was awesome.
So, Syrup, that's that shit with codeine in it?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, ASAP Yams passed like a week ago,
Is that what he passed from?
Nobody knows.
Who
nobody
passed?
Knows.
What?
There's no cause of death. The guy, ASAP Yams, who's like the architect of the whole ASAP mob, this rap group from Harlem. And he had this crew called the Blackout Boys. And it's like, my boy Aaron had a t-shirt, did the logo Blackout Boys, and then they had a crew, they got a podcast, but he passed like a week ago, known Scissor Xanax dude, and so.
But they haven't, haven't said why, right?
Yeah, no, they haven't said why.
Yeah.
But, you know, after it happened, I know a lot of friends of mine were just like, dude, we got to chill with this. We got to chill.
Well, that codeine syrup, That's, yeah. I never did it, but I did do some NyQuil. I've talked about it on the podcast before. Yeah. I took NyQuil once. I was really sick, and I got that old NyQuil. This is like in the 1990s, and it was wonderful.
But yeah, like NyQuil, like
the real NyQuil.
Like
NyQuil
half with a codeine. Bottle type of thing?
Yeah, there's codeine and some other stuff. No, I didn't get... I mean, I took what the dose supposed to take.
Oh, your jelly leg. Oh, yeah, your jelly leg, yeah.
I was just lying in bed, like the world was giving me a big, beautiful hug. Yeah. It's all love. It's just like, it just felt so good. I remember, I'll never forget, I remember thinking, this stuff is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's like drinking Robitussin in middle school or high school. Like, I would just drink Robitussin for fun.
Really?
Yeah. Because you couldn't get alcohol, me and my boys just drank Robitussin.
So how did it get into the rap community? Syrup. What happened? Syrup.
I think it was Houston. Thing. Houston and Atlanta. It was Southern. It was just, you know, Pimp C, RIP. Like, Pimp C died too. But, I mean, those dudes.
Whoa,
all the
he died too?
Yeah, the Rap-A-Lot dudes. Because it slows your heart rate down.
That's how he died too? Mm-hmm. He died from syrup?
He died. Yeah. Yams, we don't know. Yams, nobody has confirmed. So nobody knows how he passed. But, like, people know.
It's how old
like
was
a,
he?
It's like an epidemic.
Oh, man.
In
was
itself,
he 26?
Right?
Yams was like 26, I think. So, I don't know. I'm not sure.
He's a kid.
I'm not sure, man.
That's fucking young.
It's sad.
That's young to pass.
Yeah, that's why I'm not joking about it anymore because it's like, dude, it's pretty dangerous. It'll creep up on you. You think it's just cough syrup, but it'll creep up on you.
Wow. Damn. Yeah. That's a thing that, with the youth today, though. I know that. Yeah. There's a lot of kids that are drinking cough syrup.
Yeah. I mean, I did it. Growing up, like, not all the time, maybe like once or twice a year or something like that, but I never saw it as that serious. But now you start to see people pass it. It's serious, mm-hmm. You know?
Well, they're doing it probably every day.
I'm not sure, man. I'm not sure. It's just not to be fucked with. I don't like, I also, people in Philly, like in Harlem, they'll do pancakes and syrup, which is you drop the Xanax into the codeine, and then that's just good night.
Oh, my God.
That's good night.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We were in Boston 2 weeks ago, and there was this dude that was fucked up, and he was standing in front of the W Hotel, and just standing there. His pants were, like, half falling down, and he just kept leaning forward like he was going to face plant. Well, like, he's going down. And then he'd catch himself. And then he moved forward every time he did it to the point where he was in the middle of the fucking road.
Oh, my God.
In the middle of the road, just fucked up, and then leaning forward. And my friend was like, he's drunk. And I'm like, that guy is not drunk. That is some next level shit. That's not drunk.
Yeah.
He's on some pills or something.
Yeah.
But he kept like leaning forward. And then we're like, he's going. And he face plant and he just catch himself. We watched him for like 5 minutes. My friend was like, rescue him. I'm like, well, you rescue him. You ain't rescuing that guy. You rescue that guy, you got to go back to his childhood. Figure out what the fuck made him the way he is. You got to take a time machine, kill his parents. You know, there's a lot of shit you got to do to rescue that guy.
Yeah. It'll put the hooks in you, man. Like, that's why, you know, kids don't do drugs, right? It's rough, man. It's rough.
You don't need it. You can just smoke some weed, kids.
Yeah, I don't even really smoke weed. I mean, I smoked like 3 nights ago, but I've stopped having weed in the crib. Like, I'll smoke when I'm out. Yeah. Because I noticed, I went through some family shit and I noticed I would get really depressed when I smoked. Like, it would just make me depressed. And I was like, this really is a depressant. So I just smoke socially now.
In what way did it make you depressed?
Like, when I'm really sad about, like, when there's something going on, I feel like I don't have my own self-control if I'm smoking weed. Like, I can control the emotions and block things out. But once I smoke weed, it's just like, it'll hit you.
What makes you hyper-aware?
Yes, super aware.
Yeah, sometimes.
You wallow in it.
Yeah, sometimes that's not protecting you. But I always feel like it's the plant is trying to let me know all the real shit that I'm dealing with and all the dangers of all the shit that I'm dealing with. So it makes – that's like where paranoia comes from.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, people say weed makes me paranoid. I'm like, well, you should be fucking paranoid if you're paying attention to the – what weed is doing is letting you aware – letting you become aware of all the variables that maybe you're pushing aside or putting blinders on.
Yeah, I think I've just been stressed lately. A lot of shit going on in my life. And I was like, whoa, I can't look at all this 24 hours.
Right.
I have to be able to just get away from this. And when I was smoking weed, it was like, kaboom. I marinated in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do this, man.
Mm. Yeah.
So I got it out the house now, just smoking when I'm with friends, you know?
There you go. That's a smart – well, I think like everything, you know, you need moderation. You can't just be high all day, every day.
The people you've taken breaks before too, right?
Oh, yeah. I take weeks.
Yeah.
I'll take weeks off of it.
Yeah.
Like if I go on vacation or whatever, I always take breaks.
I've never gotten anything from smoking it, but like I've been like eating it on occasion.
Yeah,
and
I got some shit right here. We'll get you something.
I feel totally different eating. I feel good eating it.
Yeah,
but smoking it just doesn't do it.
Well, I'll explain it because I've explained it a million times in the podcast. People are tired of hearing it. But when you eat it, it's a totally different drug.
Yeah,
when you eat it, it's processed by your liver and it becomes something called 11-hydroxy metabolite. It's 4 to 5 times more psychoactive than THC. But it's a totally different drug. It's way more powerful. Yeah. That's why you can have like one of those little 75 milligram THC candies. Well, 15. You can have a 15 milligram THC. If you're Joey Diaz, you go with the 75. But those 15 milligram THC candies, they just give you a nice feeling, man. You just feel good.
Yeah.
Feel relaxed.
Yeah.
You're Iron Man with the eating because if I eat, I bug. I bug out.
Yeah.
I can smoke.
It's about the volume. It's like you just got to get the right guy to sell you the right amount. That's what it is. The right amount is, I feel like 20 milligrams is good. And you get crazy and you start getting into 50 and 75 and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know dudes who go deep. Like my friend Joey, he goes deep. Joey will chomp 2 150s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'll have panic attacks and shit.
Yeah,
on
no,
airplanes.
See, yeah, I ate an indica beef jerky and I ate the whole jerky myself.
Oh, man.
Was supposed to be dosed between like a couple people and I thought I died. I woke up my brother, I thought I died, and I was like, I'm a ghost. You gotta take me to the hospital. And he took me to the hospital and I'm doing jumping jacks in the emergency room. Straight jumping jacks. And they're like, why are you doing jumping jacks in the ER? And I was like, I need to feel alive. I need to feel
if
like
I
my
stop,
heart is
I'm
beating.
Gonna die.
Yeah, I was like, if I stop, I'm gonna die. And the doctor rolled up on me. He's like, son, there's nothing I can do for you. I go, really? Really? I'm doing jumping jacks. And he's like, I have one piece of advice. And I go, what is it? He goes, if you're gonna eat weed, don't be such a pussy about it.
Whoa!
But it got me sober because I was
this
like,
"This is the doctor."
Yeah, the doctor woke me out of it because all of a sudden I was like, "Wait, so you say I'm not gonna die?" He goes, "You're not gonna die if you stop being a pussy. Just stop it."
Whoa! The stop doctor it. Said this. How old was the doctor?
Dude, he was like a 40-year-old white dude, really cool in Houston. I did this on the road in Houston. This, yeah, Houston. Yeah, I don't need to be in Houston in Atlanta. I just get in trouble.
Houston
news.
And Atlanta. Why Houston and Atlanta?
You could just get a. I had like a liter of something. It was some sort of like vodka, some shitty vodka. We rolled up to the Smoothie King because you could get the Smoothie King drive through. Dump out half your smoothie, fill the rest with vodka and scissor, and then just good night.
Oh
yeah.
There's a place in West Palm. There's the Improv in West Palm. It was connected to this place. I forget the name of it, but they used to have these drinks. That were like it was like a frosty, like what are those things, like, you know, you get them at the movie theater, you know, they're fucking slushies.
Yeah, yeah,
but they were alcohol, and there was one called Call a Cab, because if you drank it you need to call a cab.
Yeah,
it was like 5 drinks in one drink, like 5 drinks worth of alcohol in one of these fucking things, and you would drink it and it you didn't know what you were drinking because it was so sweet, like as you were drinking it didn't feel like it's a slight alcohol taste to it. But good Lord, you're about to make some fucking poor decisions after you drink that shit.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
And when I was younger, you'd just get up, you'd be in another town, you're like, yo, we in Atlanta, let's wild out. And it was like twice a year, I would just be like on my lights out dance shit, right? I'm like, yo, it's time to do the lights out dance.
That's what you call blacking out?
Yeah.
The lights out dance.
Remember Sean Merriman played for the Chargers? He was doing the crazy like lights out dance. And I was like, yo, I'm about to do the lights out dance. But I had to chill, man. After that, I was like, I'm too old for this shit.
Too old,
man.
Well,
too old for
very,
this
very, very bad for the liver.
Yeah.
That's hey, the th- you got to get
bounce,
out of here. Randall's got to go.
Man. Yeah.
Want to let him out, man?
Yo. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Randall. Appreciate it, man.
Of course. Got to pick up my daughter.
Yeah. Awesome. Keep it away. All right,
sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother.
Joe,
thanks so much.
Thanks
man.
For being on the show.
Of course.
And good luck, man. Good
thanks,
luck with
man.
The show.
Later, man.
Good luck with all that North Korea shit, too, son.
Yeah. No, he's the best, dude. For
good
real.
Dude.
The fucking
yeah, I
best.
Hung out with him before the show. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
That's a crazy position to be in, man. To play a dictator
in
a movie that gets banned, that Sony is so scared of it, they pull it out of the movie theater.
Yeah. He's one of, you know, I have so much respect for him because you meet a lot of people who they'll do anything for a role.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he was trying to like give his role back and be like, I don't think I'm the one for this.
That's amazing.
I was like, I've never seen honor like this from anybody in this industry. So, I mean, he's for real.
Yeah, that's amazing that he made that decision. Well, it's amazing that the movie freaked him out less than the show.
Yeah.
You know, one of them is just social pressure or social responsibility, and the other one being like a real legitimate threat where Sony's hiring armed guards.
Yeah.
And it seems like he freaked out about that less than your show.
It was for him, it was more morals and values and like representing. He used to be like an Asian studies professor.
Really?
Yeah. There's kids, like, I'll put up a photo of him on Instagram and they're like, yo, that's Randall Park. He was my professor or my like graduate assistant or whatever.
Wow. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, he seems like a very educated, measured sort of a dude.
Yeah. You know? Real smart.
That's a wild, wild thing, man, to be a part of, like, one of the most controversial movies in all of history. I mean, if you think about, like, Hollywood movies...
Probably the most controversial.
It's right up there with Passion of the Christ. Do you remember Passion of the Christ?
Yeah.
There was that one, and there was the other one before Passion of the Christ. Willem Dafoe played Jesus in a much more controversial film a long fucking time ago.
I don't remember that one.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but people were mad as fuck. Because I think he had like a sexual relationship with Mary in the movie or something like that. And people,
The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People thought it was blasphemous. But it's still, the thing about Christians is, man, you can piss them off and they'll fucking get angry and you get a few death threats. But, you know, it's not like someone drawing Muhammad. Like this Charlie Hebdo thing, like that's the most fucked up of all the religions to pick on. You pick on the Muslims and they do dark shit.
You start to see a pattern though, right? It's like people, whether it's France or America, people in like a position of power feel like they're entitled, right? We talked about entitlement. They feel entitled, like I have to be able to make fun of everybody.
Mm.
And is it worth it?
Well, they think that you got to change the culture. That what I think a lot of people think that it's almost a responsibility to take those risks because at the end of the day, anybody that is angry to the point where they want to kill someone for satire is in the wrong.
No, it is.
And you have to protect
it is.
You have to protect free speech. And the only way to protect free speech, like Sam Harris felt that everyone should have, like unilaterally across the board, like every magazine, every newspaper should have published all those images. That's the only way they could ever protect free speech.
How do you feel?
Well, I'm not a publisher, so I don't. Yeah. I see Sam's point, but I also see the point of people that don't want to publish it because they don't want to risk their lives for something that they feel like is a story they're reporting on. They don't feel like it's their responsibility because they didn't create those cartoons. But they feel like this is a story they're reporting on. They can report on that story without putting them in danger.
Yeah.
Like this is not like the first time someone's been killed for making a drawing about Muhammad. I mean, there were some credible threats against the South Park guys after they did those episodes of South Park where they had Muhammad in like a guy like was in a teddy bear outfit and then they put him inside a truck. He was talking from inside a truck and they still were getting like credible threats. Like people were saying they were going
to
kill him.
I absolutely believe in everybody's freedom of speech to say whatever it is you want to say. Like you have to have that right. But you also have to know there's going to be repercussions you can't expect.
Yeah.
And you have to calculate it, right? Because it's also, did we have to make the interview?
Mm.
Did that movie have to get made?
I didn't see it, so I can't say. If I saw it and it was as funny as like Team America, I would say yeah.
I love Team America. You know, I don't even think North Korea's mad about Team America. It's so good, no, right? I fucking love Team America. But that's why the South Park dudes, I love them. Because they have a purpose and there's something they're really saying. And it's like everybody can be in on it in a way. The interview is not nuanced like that. Randall does a really good job for, I'd say, two-thirds of the movie humanizing Kim Jong-un. But then, of course, like the writing takes a dive and it just is like, okay, here's everything we expected to see in this movie.
They had to wrap it up, probably.
They wrapped it up, Hollywood proper.
Mm.
And, you know, it's for people who are in, like, oppressed countries or in oppressed ideology, it's why I continue to poke them.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're going to respond badly. You kind of have a responsibility to, like, people just, like, don't fucking poke that dog.
And if you're going to poke that dog, you got to have a real solid, legitimate point to what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. There has to be a positive social benefit to, like, what's going on here. It's not just to, like, create a stunt to flex the muscle of freedom of speech.
Yeah, there's like deep responsibilities that you have when you tackle any like really super controversial subject. This is some deep responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that's one of the deepest, right?
Yeah, just even me and you, I probably have the legal right to say whatever the fuck I want to say, but like, why would I say that to you? I respect you. Do you know what I mean? It's just
right.
Like, you know, we do it in our daily lives.
Well,
so.
You could, you know, I mean, I could see if they, I don't know. The Charlie Hebdo thing is strange because what was really fascinating to me was not necessarily, I mean, it was horrible what had happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily surprising, right?
No.
But what was surprising to me was like super progressive people who were criticizing the magazine, saying that this is in response for racist cartoons. And they were almost justifying it in a way. They were saying they weren't justifying it, but by focusing on what they felt was racist cartoons instead of like, hey, so what? You know, the assassins stormed a magazine and shot people. And
you guys are doing,
you guys are looking for social brownie points by trying to be like the most progressive, sensitive, non-racist people alive. Like, there's only one response. The response is you should never kill someone for drawing something. Period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think what the articles, I fully agree with you. There's no justification for any of this radical fucking stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, I don't even connect it to Islam. I think it's a cover and it has nothing to do with Islam. These are just people on their own doing wild, crazy, abhorrent behavior. My thing is as the rational people in the situation, as the rational people in a relationship to these radical movements, it's just why incite it? It's not worth it. You know, like, we have to be better.
Right, but when does it end? I mean, how do you stop that sort of behavior? Do you kill everybody who thinks like that? What do you do? I mean, how do you end?
Well, people keep joining ISIS.
Right.
And people keep joining Al-Qaeda. And, you know, there's a lot of those, you know, Vice, I think, did something called, like, Children of the Drones. And talked about how, I think me and Shane talked to you about it last time we were here. But it's, you know, people whose families have been killed by drones, they'll sign up.
Of course.
They'll go do that.
And you would too. And I would too. If you were in that land and your family got killed by some fucking robot shooting missiles out of the sky and they killed the wrong people, which happens way more often than not.
Yeah.
They're way more unsuccessful than they are successful.
Like, think about it this way, Joe. Like, their lives just don't count like our lives matter. You know, like, this happened in Paris. It was terrible. There's terrible tragedy. There's no justification for any of this. But then it's, you know, what's going on with Boko Haram. Those lives aren't worth as much as the ones in Paris, at least in the eyes of the press and in the eyes of the aid. And
because there's Somalis that were killed and they're black.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, those are some of the factors. I think there's even more. But even with drones, it's like we accept that innocent people get killed. If this was in America, I mean, we wouldn't accept this. Imagine if cops were using drones. We wouldn't fucking accept that.
Yeah, man. It's Nigeria, actually.
Yeah.
It's not, I was wrong. But I don't know, man. It's just the world today, the climate of the world today, it's so disturbing. It's so disturbing that we would think it's okay to engage in a practice where the great majority of the people that get killed by that practice are innocent.
Yeah.
Which is what drones are.
Yeah. And also the thing for me is just like I definitely fully agree with you that there's never a reason to kill anyone over a satirical article, picture, whatever. But the fact of the matter is it's like, do we want to save lives or do we want to make a statement about free speech?
Yeah.
I think it's about saving lives. I think it's about doing the right thing and saying these people feel oppressed. We've killed, you know, who knows why they're joining ISIS? Who knows why they're joining Al-Qaeda? But we need to go the extra mile and figure out why they're mad, address these things, and not just, like, sit on our high horse. Because they're mad. And they probably have some reason for it. And whether it's rational or not, let's diffuse it instead of inciting it. Like, that's my opinion, is that we're not wrong, but, like, let's solve the problem.
And the other problem is once you have someone whose child who's the child of someone who was killed by drones or your children were killed by drones and you become, you know, this sort of a radical fundamentalist, it's you can't turn that around. Like, no. There's no eye for an eye there. I mean, it's just like you've created something that almost has to go through generations and generations in order to calm down. And there's no way to have any sort of immediate fix. And everybody wants an immediate fix. You want an immediate fix.
Oh, no, man. This is going to take hundreds of years. Imagine even if you weren't killed by drones or you're just a kid in Iraq or Afghanistan and you've seen your entire neighborhood blown up and you're born into this life. You have no choice. You have nowhere to go. You have no opportunity. There's no hope. And then the one thing you have is religion. There's these people writing these cartoons, making fun of you. Like, what else do you have?
Yeah.
We're really kicking people who have nothing. And when you poke people who have nothing, it's not reasonable, but bad things are going to happen.
And that's what fuels the sort of crazy conspiracy theories about the military-industrial complex being this sort of perpetual war machine. Like, create enemies like that. That's the way to create enemies. Destroy areas, kill 1 million innocent people in Iraq. That's the number that I've heard. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what somewhere between several hundred thousand and 1 million innocent people have died as a direct result of our actions in Iraq. Just that number alone, man. That's almost ensuring there's going to be some sort of a fucking military conflict over there for a long time. And the people that are alive today that are involved in selling arms in the military-industrial complex, they're going to profit off of that action for a long time.
And what do we have against these people? You don't have anything against them. I don't have anything against them.
How could you?
I don't know why we're there. Like, no idea. And,
well,
we're there
for false pretenses.
Yeah.
For both places, whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq. The idea behind it was a lie, especially Iraq. I mean, the idea that, you know, the one thing is like, hey, you know, we got rid of a dictator. Yeah, we definitely did. He was a piece of shit. No doubt about it. But as a piece of shit, we propped up. We put him in the place in the first place. We helped him out.
Yeah.
And now what's better? What's better? Is that better than ISIS?
I mean, we divided that country.
Yeah.
You know, we divided that country. And then Palestine, all the countries had something to do with that. And then we look at Iraq and people, even the cynical ones, are like, we're there for oil. But look at oil prices now. With fracking and natural gas, now the oil price has dropped. Like, so now why are we still fighting people?
Well, there's still money. You know, even though there's not as much money, there's still a shitload of oil.
Yeah, like I'm against fracking, but if it can create Middle East peace, like maybe I'm for fracking. You know what I mean? Like, I'm definitely against fracking, but
yeah,
it's just like we can't win with anything, man.
Yeah, that's people are gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, in many ways.
Yeah, and they say the world temperature was the hottest year ever on record since they kept – and they said that by 2025, it's going to – greenhouse gases, the temperature of the earth will be irreversible. And, like, who knows if that's true, but, I mean, I feel like we should just start to work on it now, you know?
Well, they could start to work on it now, but I think the real issue is once the cycle has begun, it's almost impossible to turn around. It's kind of got to play out. I had this guy, Randall Carlson, on my podcast, and he's going to be on again soon. Let me pull that shit up. February 2nd, he'll be back again. And he's a fascinating guy, and he's an expert on cataclysmic events and global warming, he said, is far preferable to global cooling. He's like, everybody that's worried about global warming, all the great periods in history as far as advancement, as far as like innovation, civilization, they all have followed global warming. Global cooling, on the other hand, and these were all natural cycles before we started inventing machines and carbon emissions and all that shit. But the global cooling, he said, ice ages is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, we could debate this forever, but the thing is that this is an artificial warming.
Well, it's artificially accelerated. The cycle has always been, there's a natural cycle that you could track that's always existed of warming and cooling and uncontrollable, like the Ice Age. That wasn't caused by man, you know, and the Ice Age, the ending of the Ice Age also wasn't caused by man. They believe it was caused by asteroidal impacts around 12,000 years ago. But this is something that Randall's an expert in. I mean, he had these charts and graphs and showed us all these photographic pieces of evidence.
Global warming's a good thing?
He doesn't. Well, everyone's like, the debate is settled. He's like, the debate hasn't even begun. Like, it hasn't even begun. But he's saying this is not, it's, look, it's definitely not good. Pollutants aren't good. Particulates are what he's really worried about more than the warming. He's worried about what we're doing to the air and places where they're burning coal. Like if you look at China and these cities that are almost unoccupiable, like you people can't live there. They're walking around with fucking masks on their face everywhere. The sky is perpetually dark gray. He said that's particulates. He said that's what we should really, really be concerned with, pollutants, what we're doing to the ocean. But he's like, global warming is a bad thing, but it's not nearly as bad as the alternative.
He said interesting.
Global cooling is terrifying.
I gotta listen to that one.
Woo, he scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
Well, he also scared the fuck out of me because he was explaining all the verifiable instances of asteroidal impacts throughout history. Verifiable, where asteroids have hit or comets have hit, things have hit the Earth and just fucked everything sideways. And this is what they tie this into these ancient structures that are totally unexplained. Like there's some ancient structures from pre 10,000 years ago that they didn't even know people could build these kind of things back then. They thought that 10,000 years ago was like people were hunters and gatherers. So they've tried to explain a lot of these structures, especially because they're made out of stone. They've tried to explain them by saying, no, they were built, you know, much sooner by, you know, modern people, and they just forgot how they built them. They were built like 2,000 years ago or something like that. But they've discovered some structures that they have verified that are 12,000, 14,000 years old. Like there's some stuff in Turkey that they found. This place called Göbekli Tepe, they found for sure 12,000 years old. Huge stone columns with 3D reliefs of animals on them and shit. All really sophisticated stuff for hunters and gatherers at the time that were supposed to be wearing animal skins and throwing pointy sticks at fucking moving creatures, you know. So this guy, Randall Carlson, points to all these instances of core samples where they find this stuff called nuclear glass that only exists on nuclear blast test sites and where asteroids hit. And it's all over Europe and Asia at around 12,000 years in the core samples.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's verifiable evidence. And this is not just him. There's also all these other geologists that have found these micro diamonds that only exist from massive impact craters, right? Massive impacts, just huge, powerful, you know, events. And they think that somewhere around 12,000 years ago, we were just hit. You know, and that happens. He said, like, it's not whether or not it's going to happen again. It's when is it going to happen again.
And you never know when.
You never know when. And things come behind the sun, and we can't even see them until it's too late. Because the sun, the gravity of the sun bends space and time because it's so immense that you literally can't see them when they're headed your way. They're headed your way, but we can't view them. So there's things that pass near us that we didn't see until it's like, oh, Jesus. You know,
life's
like,
really too short, fam.
Ah!
It's really too short.
And even if you don't get hit by an asteroid, look, dude, I'm 47. I'm halfway dead.
Looking good, Joe.
Thank you very much. But there's no getting around that. Even if you stay looking good, well, you're going to look. I met Cindy Crawford. I think she's like 51 or something like that.
So bad still. Yeah. Yeah.
Smoking.
Still bad.
Whoa. Oof. You know, some girls, they hit that wall hard, but this bitch has been preparing for that wall.
Yeah.
She's got fucking rubber shoes. She puts her feet up. She's bouncing back. I don't know what she's doing, but whatever she's doing, she should write books and give seminars.
Yeah, she broke through that wall. She definitely
She's
broke
doing
down.
Something. She's beautiful. I mean, not just beautiful for 50.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but that doesn't matter. She's going to die too. They all die. Everybody dies. So whether you get hit by an asteroid or global cooling or global warming but the reality is civilization itself might not exist if we get hit.
That's why all the other shit we're talking about, people are like, they treat it like life and death. And it's just like, come on, man.
It's perspective.
Like, nothing's worth it.
It's all perspective. I mean, it's life and death for them because their life is dog shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If your life is amazing, it's not life and death if somebody draws a cartoon of your fucking leader.
Yeah.
You know?
But even when I was broke, just selling, doing whatever, like fucking around, like life was still dope. It's mad fun.
Well, you're a fun dude. You got a great personality, which is why you should be some sort of an entertainer in the first place. You know?
Asian Joe Pesci. We make this happen. You want to be De Niro? You want to be Ace?
No.
Come on.
I'm not interested.
You don't want to run the Tangiers?
No. I think I do too much as it is. It's too confusing already being a podcaster / cage fighting commentator / stand-up comedian. That shit is all too confusing.
Yeah, your UFC, you kill it on UFC, though. That shit is great, man. I'm not even a big UFC fan, but just because, like, when it's on at the bar or my friends are watching, it's fucking dope to see you on that shit, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. I enjoy doing it. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's crazy how the athletes, the level of athletes is just fucking through the roof now. You're getting these John Jones types characters, Anthony Johnson type characters, which is these high-level athletes now that probably would have been playing other professional sports like baseball or basketball or something like that. And now they're fighting in MMA, and you're seeing just, woo,
yeah, some high-level shit. Gladiator shit.
Mm-hmm.
I could never imagine fighting any of those dudes.
Dude, it's you got to want to do that and only that.
Yeah.
That's got to be what you want to do. There's people that, like, David was on the podcast once, David Choate, and he was talking to me about, you know, he wanted to have an MMA fight. I'm like, don't do it.
No.
He's like, I just want to do it just to say I did it. I'm like, don't. No. You're going to fight somebody. You'll fight someone who lives for it, and you can't do that. You know, you fight some dude, and he'll head kick you, and you'll be depressed for the rest of your life.
Yeah, Cho's so fucking talented, and he really can do 99% of everything he wants to do, but UFC is in that 1%. It's like, Cho, no matter how talented you are, you will get fucked up.
Well, I mean, if he dedicated his whole life to it, I mean, from the time he was like 15 on. Yeah.
Not if Critter's training him. Like, Critter fucking broke his rib. Like, Critter's idea of being his personal trainer is just like kicking him in the stomach. And it's like, take it, Dave.
Did he do that?
Like, yeah, man.
He kicked him in the stomach?
Dude, he broke his rib somehow training him. And then I remember I asked Critter, like, what's he doing? He's like, oh, I got Dave, like, running down the street, man. Like, he's just running down the street. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, Critter's going to break Cho.
But it's perfect for Cho. Like, to have a guy like Critter.
Yeah, no, Critter's the best,
man.
He's
so crazy.
Critter's hilarious.
All that shit that went down with him, where there were, you know, people were deciding. There was the same thing that we were talking about earlier. The social justice warriors attacked him because of the story that he told on his podcast.
Yeah.
But if you know Dave, he's got this flair for entertainment where he exaggerates the truth. And, you know, there's no one coming forward to say that he raped them. You know, this is like he's bullshitting. Like, it's half bullshitting for fun, for theater, for excitement. But,
dude, it's these days, man, you never know.
Well, people are just waiting to get upset. Instead of actually getting upset, they're waiting to get upset. And also, people have one perspective only. I watched this. Here's a perfect example. I was online today, and I was following this abortion debate between these two people. And it was the most bizarre thing ever, where someone was talking about at what age does the fetus become a person. And the argument, like, watching both sides go back and forth. And this wasn't even like a right-wing versus left-wing side.
Yeah.
It was like someone who is like an objective rationalist who was debating someone who's a hardcore left-winger who was also like one of these like super white knights defending women, you know. And one of the arguments was, it was so hilarious, that it's a woman's right to choose. I have no business saying what a woman should or shouldn't do with her body, which is universally, like, I agree with that as well. But what they were saying was, this is where it got really crazy. No person has the right to exist in another person's body without permission. So what they were saying, the argument was that a baby doesn't have the right to use a woman's body without her permission. I was like, this is fucking crazy.
A baby, like, cannot use a woman's body.
They're so pro woman, so pro right. Like, you were talking about, like, 9 months in. Like, at what point the real debate was, and this is, I think, is a real debate. And this is, again, coming from me, who's pro choice. There's a real debate as to when is that a person. And to say that it's not a debate is fucking horseshit. To say that it's not a debate that a woman who gives birth tomorrow kills the baby today and it's her prerogative. Like, okay, really? Like, at what time is this creepy? At what time is this abhorrent behavior when someone has a living being inside their body? Well, it's not a living being until it's born. Well, really? Like, come on, man. There's some you have to have some flexibility to your perception, because this is a strange and very unusual situation where you can terminate a life. And I mean, I think you can terminate a life. I mean, the image that they were showing was a 3-day-old embryo and the head of a pin. So we started this conversation, which just looks like a few cells. But when it's a fucking baby with an umbilical cord and a heartbeat and eyes and its fingers are moving, like, whoa.
Yeah.
to pretend that's just the you know, no person has the right to use a woman's body without her permission. Like, oh really?
You're absolutely right that there is a debate that is being had constantly at what point something becomes a human being, because there are people, I mean, obviously it's a human being once it comes out.
Yeah. It's not a black and white issue. It's just not. It's yeah. not. It's very...
I'm super pro-choice, though, and I just, as a man, I feel like women need to decide what they want to mm-hmm. do with their bodies. And, you know, we run so much in this world that, for me, I just don't want to legislate women's bodies, like, from my perspective.
No,
even
no.
though it sucked to be in a personal situation, if I had a girl and we were having a kid, 8 months in, she doesn't like me anymore, doesn't want to have a kid and wants to abort. I mean, dude.
Right.
That would be some shit.
Well, not only that, like, does a woman even have a right to tell a woman what she can and can't do for her body? Obviously, a man, we don't understand. We don't ever get pregnant. It's not our concern. Or it's not up to us to decide, I should say. But for a woman, can a woman tell another woman that she can't have an abortion at 9 months? I mean, like, where do we draw this line?
It's also a question, too, like, where, like, does the government have an ability to legislate? Imagine right. if you were dating someone and you guys were having a kid and she was 8 months pregnant and just on a whim decided, you know what, I feel like I don't want this baby to be a tenant in my stomach anymore.
Yeah, this is a person who does not have permission to use my body. Like, yeah. whoa, the way they phrased it.
That would really test my intellectual and like, reasonableness. Right? Mm-hmm. That would really put me to the test. And that's why when you think about those situations, you're like, can we even logically vote on this? Like, you can't really have an opinion or vote on this till you're in that situation. You kind of, like, it needs to be.
Well, the person who's debating with started insulting him, the super left-wing white knight person, started insulting him and calling him an idiot, which is always when you know that they're falling apart in the debate. Because he was saying, okay, well, you were saying before that it's not a person. And now you're saying, no person has the right to use someone's body without their permission. So what the fuck is it? Is it a person? Are you killing a person that doesn't have the right to use your body? Or is it not a person till it's born? And then they started insulting them because they realized the moral conundrum, the logical conundrum that they're in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fucking real, like, there's no black and white there.
No.
Whether you're pro-choice or whether you're pro-life, that issue is a very bizarre issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about women's rights and the rights over their body. That one, I don't have the answer. Nor do I want to be part of the decision-making, to be honest. Like, I just don't feel like I got the fucking facts for that one, kid.
I don't think anybody has the facts for that one. Well, that's one of those things about life itself.
If someone wants to abort a baby at 8 months for no real good reason, besides just maybe not wanting to pump it out, like, that's wow.
But there's a lot of people that are willing to jump up and defend women and, you know, and jump into this position of being the sort of this defender, no matter what, this defender of women's rights.
Yeah, nothing in the world is absolute, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the thing I think people have to believe in. And also, yeah, people hold it as like a badge of honor. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I defend this no matter what. And
well,
it's like,
they're looking for social brownie points instead of objectively discussing a very bizarre issue. Well, it's a very bizarre issue. Abortion's bizarre. And
like, even you brought up Cho, right? We all love Cho. And that podcast episode with the masseuse rape story, dude, that put me in a tough spot. That put me in a tough spot, dude.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, people were calling me and asking me, and they're mm-hmm. like, you're an Asian man, too. Do you think this is an Asian male angst thing? And I was like, yo, number one, this has nothing to do with
It has nothing to
race.
Do with what part of the country your ancestors came from.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
And I'm just like, but I can't, I mean, he's the homie, and so, like, I know who he is and I know his intentions, but if I didn't know him, I'd be tight at that. Like, that's, if you really did that, like, I never ask him, but I'm like, if you really did, like, in my mind, I'm like, if you did that, I don't know if we could be friends, homie. You know?
Well, what exactly did he say? He said that he asked her to touch it. She started jerking him off, and then he grabbed her head and he asked her to suck it, and she didn't want to. And then he grabbed her head and then started mouth fucking her.
Yeah.
That's what he said, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so bizarre. Like, it's so David Cho.
It's so Cho. It's really the line. Like, that motherfucker just stands on the line. And, mm-hmm. you know, you.
Well, if you're a woman and you heard that, and you'd imagine being this poor woman who is a massage therapist who's being...
Probably doesn't speak English.
Yeah, taking this millionaire guy's money and you really, you know, you can't
you're
do anything
your
about it.
You're shoving your penis in a mouth that's pretty indefensible, dude.
But she's already jerking him off. I mean, what's up there? No. She didn't want to. She just doesn't want to lose her job. And like,
yo, I've been with women where even like... I'm so careful with this shit. You never know. Like, I'll be dating a girl for a couple years and it's just, you know... No forcible blowjob. Do you know what I mean? I just can't do it. Like I,
but I dated a girl who used to like that. That was her thing. She used to watch porn where guys were like grabbing the back of a girl's head and forcing the head on her dick.
Yeah.
And I was like, why do you like that?
I mean, if somebody gives me the Asian Joe Pesci role and I have to force Ginger to suck my dick, I'm going to be morally compromised. Like, I don't do that in my normal life.
Yeah, but it's a role. But if you're dating a girl and that's her thing, she likes you to grab her head. I mean, it's not involuntary.
Yeah.
She wants
you
to do it.
If it's discussed beforehand and she signs the papers with my lawyer so that for the next 6 months I can, you know, do this and that's what you want, sure.
Have you ever seen that Louis C.K. joke about that?
No. What is it?
He's dating some girl, or he hooks up with some girl. They start making out, and he tries to have sex with her. She says no, and then he sees her the next day, and she goes, what happened last night? And he goes, what do you mean? She goes, well, why didn't we have sex? He goes, well, I tried, but you didn't want to. She goes, no, I did. And he goes, well, why did you say no? She goes, well, I was hoping you would just go for it. He goes, what? Like, you wanted me to rape you on the off chance that you're into that shit?
No. She, that's the shorty that, like, fucks everybody. Not only are you fucking women and women's body image and women's rights, but now you're fucking dudes. Because now you just taught a dude a move, like, rubbing your elbow into the boobs. Do you know what I mean? Like, now you put a really bad tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, it's not a...
Because the next time Louis C.K. gets to that, it means yes.
It's a great bit. It's a great bit because any man who dates more than, you know, X amount of women is going to come across...
You meet
one,
a psycho.
Well, you're going to come across an aberration, a very rare person who has weird... Like this girl that I used to date who wanted guys to grab her head, force it on her dick.
Yeah.
Like she wanted to blow me, but she wanted me to grab... She would... Like I dated her for a while. She was her shit. That was what she was into.
Yeah.
She wanted to like get on her knees, and she wanted you to grab the back of her head and like face fuck her.
I'm funny. I've been in a situation where it's like I want to be choked, right, or I want to be smacked or whatever. And like, look, in the heat of the moment, the customer's always right. So I'll do it, right? I'm in the service industry, but after I'll always be like, yo, man, like, is something wrong? Like, you okay? Like, what the fuck did your dad do to you? You know? And yeah. I'm always kind of just like, yo, this, like, you can't, like, because I would never want to be punched in the face.
Yeah. But you're a guy, and I think there's also a different, like, women, there are women who have legitimate rape fantasies.
Yeah, it's a social structural thing, though. Like, if
is it? Or is it
a
masculine,
right?
Feminine thing? Well,
no,
there's
yeah.
definitely men who want to be raped. No
you
doubt
think?
About it. Yeah, why do you think?
Oh,
I have
him,
a
right
friend.
Here?
No, not Jamie. But I have a friend who likes getting tied up, man. He yeah. likes girls to beat him up.
Oh,
he
that's
likes
right.
Tied up.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. There are.
He likes being abused.
There are. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I was about to chalk it up to like, we live in a patriarchal society and we treat them like shit and that must be why they want this. But you're right. There are dudes too.
Yeah, there's people that
it's not
encompass
easy to nail down
every
why.
Single spot on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And there's no, I mean, there's men who wish there were women. There's women who wish there was men. There's men who like to beat women. There's women who like to beat men. There's men who like to get beat up by women. There's like...
I think the end of the story is basically just like, sexually, people are fucked. And there's no normal.
There's no normal.
The customer's always right.
there's a law that they're passing in California called the Yes Means Yes Law. And the idea is you're supposed to get verbal consent. The idea is to curb these college rape issues, which are constantly, and a lot of them, they think there's one way to mitigate that is to make sure that people communicate, because like sometimes like things are just happening and women like feel awful about it afterwards, but they didn't know how to stop it when it was going on.
Yeah.
So the idea being that a guy has to say every step of the way, can I take your clothes off? Can I put my finger in you? Can I, you know, put my dick inside you? Can I do this? Can I do that? Huh. And there's like a video that accompanies it called Consent is Sexy. And it's hilarious. This weird campaign where you get this hipster looking dude with a goofy fucking beard, and he just looks like kind of a bitch, and he's with this really hot girl, and he's like, can I kiss you? Yes. And he kisses her.
It's just like ordering toppings on a sandwich.
Like, not yet.
Yes, pepperoncini. Yeah. Yes, olives. Like, that's fucking weird, man.
And she asks him, can I touch your leg? He's like, yes. Like, whoa. Let's just get this straight. You can do whatever the fuck you want, okay? You got the green light, honey.
Yeah. Tell me when I can stick it in. The easy pass. Just like
the easy pass. Yeah. We put that shit on our forehead. It's like a turkey tester. See that? Boink. See how it's sticking out? That's a go.
Like it's just like this is you're at the casino buffet. Just bring your plate.
Yeah.
Fucking eat everything.
Yeah, I'm gonna put a fucking thing over your neck, a lanyard. While you're wearing that, you could do whatever you want. Touch me any way you want. You got a green light. But, you know, like the girl saying, can I touch your leg? And the guy's like, yes. Like, get the fuck out of here. What guy has ever said, I didn't give you permission to touch my leg?
Yeah.
Yes means yes. Don't touch my leg.
And also the asshole in me, like, I would have more fun, like, just fucking with them than actually fucking them.
Yeah.
Like, if they were like, can I touch your leg? I'd be like, just this area here. You know?
Only an inch above my knee.
Yeah.
And don't disrespect my thigh.
5 inches below my taint, 3 inches above the knee, you're safe. You touch anything else, I'll fucking cut you.
Well, there was a guy who was debating it, and he was arguing with this yes means yes thing, and he had this really important point. He said, there was a moment that happened to me when I was in college. He goes, where I met this girl, we were at a bar, and I had a couple drinks. We never talked. She looked at me, I looked at her, and she raised her eyebrows, and she went like that, like this, come here. And the guy walked towards her. She put her hand out. He grabbed her hand. He took her into the woman's bathroom and fucked her in a stall. And he said, we never talked. He goes, it was one of the greatest nights of my life because I've jerked off like 100 times since then thinking about it. I never talked to her again. We didn't become boyfriend and girlfriend. I didn't speak to this girl. We didn't exchange words. It was a loud cub.
Yeah.
He went into the bathroom with her and they fucked. They fucked. They didn't even know each other. And he's like, this could not happen with this yes means yes shit. It was the greatest night of my life. And he goes, not only that, he goes, it was instigated by a girl, like giving me the come here face, you know, and grabbing my hand. And next thing you know, we're in a bathroom and we're having sex. You know, like that kind of shit does happen with people. And
pretty much every girl, I mean, the thing you try to block it out when you're in a relationship, but pretty much every girl you know is given a bathroom blowjob. You know what I mean? Sorry, guys. All your wives probably suck the dick in a bathroom.
It is what it is.
You have to accept
girls like boys, boys like girls. Yeah. Some boys like boys, some girls like girls. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, it's fine. And bathrooms are totally fucking fine places for it all to go down.
Asteroids are coming.
Asteroids are coming, motherfucker.
The world is warming.
Exactly. There's no, and it's like to legislate this shit is just like, come on, man.
It's not the way. The way is education more than legislation. That's the way. But how do you educate a kid that's 18 years old that grew up with douchebag parents and he's got, you know, some sort of a sociopathic mindset? It's like, how do you educate people out of that besides psychedelic drugs, besides some total reset of the mind with ibogaine or ayahuasca or DMT or mushrooms? Without that?
Yeah.
And even that doesn't always work. There's people that are fucking complete sociopaths that have done all kinds of psychedelics. I know people that are out of their fucking mind, egomaniacs, that are like purportedly psychedelic users. And I'm like, how is that guy a psychedelic user? He doesn't check himself at all. He's not looking at himself introspectively at all.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work on everybody, man. There's no every... It's like we were saying, the spectrum, it's just giant.
Yeah.
It's giant.
We are so fucking weird. Humans are just fucking weird, bro. We're weird.
And I almost think like we have to be weird in order to... In order for this superorganism to exist the way it exists and function the way it functions, and in order for innovation and culture and society to exist, it almost seems like everybody has to play this very weird, unique role. And some people are pretty obvious and pretty straightforward and cookie cutter, and you're like, oh, I've seen one of these before. And then other people, you meet them, you're like, whoa, this bitch is crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
I want people to be as weird as they possibly can, as long as it doesn't infringe on my ability to be weird myself.
Yes.
You know, and that's it.
There you go.
That's
it.
That's like the basis of the social contract. It's like, I want you to be fucking psycho.
Yeah, the weird thing is like when someone tries to prevent you from being who you are because whatever you enjoy offends them, even if it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah. Or if your desires like require somebody else to be victimized, like then that's fucking, that's too weird, buddy.
Well, that's different. But as long as no one's being hurt and everyone is agreeable upon the act, like it's like gay marriage or gay sex at all, like anybody who's got an issue with people that are fucking each other, like what do you care, like what Like, what is it about you, whether it's religion or whether it's a, you know, social issues, what is it about you that gives a fuck what someone does? If two chicks want to live with each other and put on rubber strap-ons and plow each other all day, why does that freak you out?
Enjoy.
Yeah, enjoy.
You know?
It's a big world. It's not like there's only five people.
Yeah.
You know?
You could do it upstairs for me. I don't care.
I might care if you're loud. You live in one of those old apartments that have squeaky floors.
Yo, I love noise when I'm sleeping.
Do you?
Like, I need noise. Yeah, I have to like turn the TV on, leave the TV on and shit.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like quiet when I sleep.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, like New York, like when the garbage truck came or fire, like I was like fantastic.
Really?
I sleep good.
That's
yeah,
so
I like
weird.
Noise.
Where do you live in New York?
My apartment my brother has now is in Fort Greene on Adelphi between DeKalb and Lafayette.
Is that Brooklyn?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where my brother lives there now. But
In New York?
No, not I live out here now.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How long have you been down here for?
7 months. We gotta hang.
We gotta hang and we gotta do a regular podcast.
Definitely.
Man. You're
ready,
hilarious.
Man. Anytime
Let's do
you
it.
Do it.
Come
I love
on.
Doing this.
I love you doing it, man.
Yeah.
So do you like open the window up out here to hear the horns
yeah.
and shit?
I leave the window, but I'm like the border of Malibu Palisades. So mm-hmm. super
That's
it's
quiet.
Super chill. Yeah, I just leave the TV on.
Oh. That's
yeah.
what you do.
Watch
wow.
a movie, fall asleep.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Have you always been like that?
Yeah, you know, I think because my mom was always screaming and yelling and fighting with my pops. So it's like, I mean, I went to bed with Connie Corleone just breaking all the plates every night.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, people are adaptable as fuck, man. People are like some people, like they cannot deal with the city. They come in the city, they start freaking out. And some people, they freak out when they go to the country. They just don't like it.
No, I'm like desensitized. I'm totally I've seen anything that you could possibly be thrown, and just my mom's a maniac, dude.
That's hilarious. They're still together though?
Yeah, they're still together. They still fight all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
My grandparents fought so hard, dude, that I thought that I would never get married. I thought I would never have a relationship. I had issues with relationships based on not just my parents, my mother and father, my actual father. I grew up with my stepdad, who's a great guy. But my actual dad was a real fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
And he was very violent, abusive, and I saw a lot of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
Heard a lot, but I saw some, like, dark shit when I was a little kid. And then my grandparents, they didn't physically fight, but they would fucking scream at each other so hardcore that I would never want to be in a relationship. I was like, fuck this.
Yeah,
just
no,
screaming
man.
Screaming at each other.
My parents physically fought, and I used to always reach for the phone and call the cops, and both of them would be like, don't do it. And I was like, wait, the one thing you guys can agree on is for me to not call the cops? And they'd be like, go upstairs, hide your brothers. What? And I would just like put my brothers under the bed and then close the door, and they were younger than me because I was the oldest. Like, what's going on? And I had no answers for them, man.
Wow, that's
I had no
crazy.
Answers.
They were younger than you, so you were the one that had to make sense of it all to
yeah.
them?
Yeah. Dude, it was rough.
Oh,
it was rough,
fuck.
Man.
Well, my sister was a year younger than me when my mom and dad had like this physical altercation that made my mom move out of the house.
Yeah.
My dad smacked the shit out of my mother in front of the kitchen, and my little sister ran and hid, and I hid, and we were both freaked out, but my sister just shut it out. She doesn't even remember it. She doesn't talk about it. I can't forget it because in my mind it was like, okay, now I know that my dad is a shithead. Like, I used to think that, like, he was a hero and he was a great guy, and, you know, everybody wants to think their dad is Superman.
Yeah.
You know, when it was undeniable proof that he wasn't, it fucked my head up, you know? But I only had my little sister. She was only a year younger than me. It wasn't like I had to, like, explain everything.
Like, my youngest brother is good with it. He's well-adjusted. Me and my middle brother, we've never really let it go. It's, like, a part of us. And I wish that there was one parent that I could just be like, they're the good one and the other one's bad, right? My mom would, like, throw hot water at my pops. And I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? And then, you know, he would do his thing. He might smack her or whatever. And then she'd try to punch him, and then he'd hit her. And I was just like, this is WWF in the crib.
I got a friend who still fights with his wife, and his wife threw a fucking screwdriver at him and stuck him in the arm. Like, it stuck out of his arm. And he fucked her that night.
Oh.
He goes, that shit turns me on. I go, what? And he goes, one time, man, one time, well, this is hilarious. They were watching a movie together, and she fell asleep at the movie. So he took his pants down, and they're watching 300. He took his pants down and put his asshole like an inch away from her head, and he goes, and he yelled something. She woke up, and he farted right in her face.
That's a new move. That's the cornholio. Oh, man, that's a
and
new
move.
And
she fucking went crazy. She punched him in the mouth. She fucking freaked. He goes, she fucking made me see stars. Like, she cracked me in the jaw. And he goes, I fucking love it. That shit turns me on. I go, that turns you on?
No, man, when I saw this stuff with my parents, I was just like, I never want to be in a family like this.
Exactly.
Like, I've always just dated just nice, good people.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I like. I like people that are nice.
Yeah.
They're sweet.
Yeah.
I don't want no yelling. No. I'm not into yelling.
No.
I don't want to yell at my friends. I don't want anybody yelling at me.
That's the one thing I look for. People ask, what do you look for when you hire people? Good, trustworthy people. Good values. That's it. You can't teach that. People have it or they don't.
Yeah, and avoid people that you can have disputes with. Like, maybe it's not them, maybe it's how you get along with them that makes them the way they are, but whatever the fuck it is, just take the path of least resistance.
Yeah, because the asteroids are fucking coming.
They're coming! Ebola's on the way! All of the above, global warming, global cooling.
Yeah, this was fun though, man.
Yeah, I had a great time,
always
brother.
Fucking
we gotta
fun.
Do it with my friend more often,
I'm
right?
I'm around, dude.
For sure.
I'm around. We gotta hang.
And when does the show start? February 4th?
February 4th, yeah.
February 4th, fresh off the boat. Eddie Wong, you're a bad motherfucker.
Thank you,
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate
it. And follow him on Twitter. It's Mr. Eddie Wong, H-U-A-N-G. Mr. Eddie, H-U-A-N-G. Much love, my friend.
Death Squad.
He's here. We're doing it more often, folks.
Yep.
See you soon.
It was so much fun to come, man.